This is Human Rights Radio. I'm Asia Philbin with part 3 of our report on capital punishment. We'll continue with a popular argument supporting capital punishment, that it deters criminals from committing a murder. Arizona Congressman Jim Colby claims that it is obvious that a person contemplating murder would proceed if the maximum penalty is a life sentence without parole, but would reconsider if the death penalty is in effect. He cites multiple studies by the Department of Justice to support his position. We wrote to Jim Colby as we could not find the studies he referred to. So far, he has not replied. However, our research did uncover that contrary to Colby's position, most credible studies support the results of Justice Breyer on the Supreme Court, who stated, quote, "Studies of deterrence are, at most, inconclusive." Ann Nichols concurs.
There have been a number of studies, and most of them have been unable to find a deterrent effect for the death penalty. They've been unable to document whether it deters or does not deter. The evidence simply isn't there.
In fact, 80% of criminologists surveyed feel that the research does not indicate that the death penalty has any deterrence effect, according to researchers Radelet and Akers. Statistics also show that, of all criminals sentenced to life without parole, very few commit further crimes. Furthermore, countries that have abandoned the death penalty have recorded decreased homicide rates since abolition. We have already mentioned a popular argument against capital punishment as a cruel and unusual punishment that violates the Eighth Amendment. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall suggested that if the American public were aware of all the information regarding capital punishment, they would agree that it is, quote, "barbarously cruel," unquote. Contradicting his position in 1976, the Supreme Court ruled clearly that the death penalty did not violate the Eighth Amendment. But recently, for the first time since then, the Court has found unconstitutionality to be a problem. As discussed earlier, the Supreme Court recently overturned death sentences due to violations of the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The death penalty in Arizona is also under legal attack as a violation of the Sixth Amendment, as mentioned earlier as well. One of the strongest arguments supporting capital punishment is that it is essential to satisfy public outrage and to ease the suffering of the victim's family. Prosecutors routinely explain that they seek the death penalty to satisfy the needs of the victim's family, who commonly give an emotional public statement to the press before a capital trial that only the death penalty will satisfy them and say that a life sentence is the same as a victory for the defendant. Sympathy for the grieving family constitutes a very strong argument, but these statements are often made at an extremely emotional time. The media rarely goes back sometime after the death penalty is served to ask if they truly felt satisfied afterwards. After such a painful loss, many families retain their support for capital punishment, but not all. Another member of the Coalition of Arizonans to Abolish the Death Penalty, Kathy Norgaard, shares a psychologist's perspective.
We had a couple of local psychologists talk about the issue of closure, which is a term that we hear a lot, that if a victim's family member has an execution of the person who was convicted of murdering their loved one, that they're going to be able to reach closure. The reality, as these two psychologists pointed out, and there's a lot in the literature to support this, there are some things that are so horrific in our lives that are so horrendous and that hurt us at such a deep level that there's never closure. So one of the things that happens, someone's murdered, there's an execution, the family member believes, gosh, you know, he didn't suffer enough. He died too easily, or I still don't feel good, so I've got to watch more executions. It's a whole basic premise about violence, that violence never brings us to any kind of resolution. Violence just begets more violence.
Many civil rights advocates have cited institutional racism as a major problem with capital punishment. Death penalty supporters counter by citing statistics showing that the racial composition of death row inmates reflects the composition of the general society. But studies do show that race of the victim plays an important role in whether the death penalty will be sought in a case. About 50% of all murder victims are white, but in 80% of all capital cases, the victim is white. Racism surfaces at many levels. Most district attorneys are white, and even today, all white juries are common during capital trials. A study by the Department of Justice in 2001 did show that the proportion of minority capital defendants exceeds that of the general population, but denied that these results prove any systemic racial bias. Racial bias is related to another problem with the death penalty, its seemingly unfair application. Capital punishment supporters argue that death is an appropriate punishment for such a serious violent crime as homicide, but only a small percentage of all murder cases are tried as capital cases. One may assume that only the worst and most heinous acts are candidates for the death penalty. But race, socioeconomic background, inadequate counsel, and political factors can have more impact than the nature of the crime itself. For example, the county in which a crime is committed can strongly influence whether the prosecutor seeks the death penalty. Critics have claimed that capital punishment should be abolished solely because of its biased and arbitrary use by district attorneys who often use these cases to support their re-elections. One of the strongest arguments against capital punishment is one of the most basic, the large number of errors inherent in a human system. Since 1900, about 4 people per year, on average, have been released from death row after they were found to be innocent. On April 9, 2002, the 100th prisoner was released from death row since 1973. In that same time, there had been 766 executions. Death penalty supporters say that this shows that the system works to ensure that innocent people are not put to death. However, this 7.6 to 1 ratio troubles human rights activists around the country who fear that the risk of executing an innocent person is too great. Since 1900, 23 people have been executed, then later found to be completely innocent. Once a person is executed, there is no chance that we can ever do anything to try to compensate them for the wrongful sentencing. If they are imprisoned, at least we can make some attempt to correct the injustice against them. For all of the reasons we have explored in this report, a series of international instruments and human rights standards limit the use of capital punishment, or expressly prohibit it. The World Court has found the United States guilty of breaking these rules, and the United States has violated the Vienna Convention 15 times in its enthusiastic pursuit of the death penalty. Senator Tom Smith defends the poor record of the United States in the World Court.
I am not a great believer in the World Court, the decisions of the Arizona courts and the Arizona justice system should be handled in Arizona, and if the other countries want to handle their countries in such a way, that's up to them.
Other countries value these standards more than the U.S. and may use them to limit American involvement in international actions. This may affect extraditions, war crimes prosecution, or even trade. For their own reasons, one or more of the various arguments presented in this report, many U.S. citizens are compelled to fight the death penalty. Ann Nichols explains that there is a lot you can do.
The way to fight the death penalty most directly is to influence the legislature, which has the power to abolish or maintain the death penalty. And people can find out who their legislators are. We all have 2 representatives and 1 state senator by calling the League of Women Voters or the county recorder's office or party headquarters. If you give them their address, they'll plug it into the computer and tell you who your representatives are. And you can communicate with your representatives in 1 of 3 ways. Face-to-face, if they happen to have a town hall or other meeting where they're coming out and talking to voters. You can communicate with them by email. They all have an email address. And again, if you go to the website for the state of Arizona and click on the legislature's website, they have a directory and you can find the email address for your legislator. You can also phone 1-800-352-8404. That will give you a state operator and you'll say, I'd like to speak to Representative Giffords, please, and they'll connect you with Representative Giffords' office. Actually, Arizona is one of those states where we have a lot of access to our legislators. You can contact us by contacting me by email and I will put you in touch. You can join our email list, which will give you information about the death penalty in Arizona. Or just to join, I can send information to you. It's ann.nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S, at asu.edu. You can also phone 325-6240 and leave a message, and we'll get back to you, or 884-5507 extension 12. That's my number, and leave a message, and we'll get back to you.
Thanks to Ann Nichols, Kathy Norgard, Senator Tom Smith, Amnesty International, and the Death Penalty Information Center. This is Human Rights Radio. I'm Asia Philbin.